the essential podcast for educators in the UK, made by teachers for teachers.
Hello and welcome to the second edition of Homework Podcast. Firstly, we'd just like to say a huge thank you to everybody that listened to the first and gave us such positive feedback or constructive criticism, any kind of thoughts and suggestions that were directed at us. We have discussed them, have taken them on board, and we've been really touched, especially by the sort of school leaders that got in touch with us to discuss some of the issues that were raised. So just a big thank you from all of us just to kick off today about kind of that. So we've got a new feature that we're going to be using at the start of each of our podcasts going forward. Essentially, it's going to be sharing our funniest moments from the week. So one moment each, something that made us laugh or made us kind of sit back and think about why we do what we do, or just kind of a significant moment that perhaps you sort of picked your phone up as soon as you could and texted your friends about it, mentioned it in the staff room, etc. But we would like to hear from you in terms of a name for this. Believe it or not, the three of us are actually not particularly creative.
So we've
decided to hand it over to the might of Twitter. So any kind of name to summarise this kind of segment of the show.
Homework, the essential podcast for educators in the UK.
I thought I'd start. My story actually involves somebody sitting about a metre away from me at the moment, Mr. Sam Stewart. Now, Sam has a whole host of responsibilities at our school. One of them involves leading PE. As part of his PE leadership responsibility, he's taken a sort of proactive approach to PE staff uniform. For a number of years now, we've had a branded school fleece, hoodie, polo shirt and jacket. But Sam thought, you know, to tidy up things a little bit, to add some consistency to the whole sort of staff uniform for PE, he's going to get some tracksuit bottoms. Now, Sam has been, this has been a while in the making, this tracksuit, track pants, track bottoms, whatever we want to call them, this venture for Sam. I think he's sort of thought it up in June, July time, and I'm delighted to say the tracksuit bottoms arrived last week, late November, early December.
Efficient.
Now, we were all very excited to unveil these tracksuit bottoms. They came into our pigeonholes via Sam.
How big are your pigeonholes?
Well, I think with what I'm about to say, they need to be a bit bigger. Sam and a colleague of mine, I actually got quite an early night last week, Monday night last week. I woke up to a whole barrage of WhatsApps with photos of Sam and Josh, our friend and colleague, wearing their tracksuit bottoms. Now that would, I imagine you'd think that would be unremarkable, but if you see these things, you'll see what I mean. The closest comparison I can give you is a pair of fishing waders teamed with a sort of Elvis Presley flair style leg. The zip on these things is quite astounding. Normally, you'd sort of undo the zip to the shin and it would unveil a bit of calf. Not these. The zip goes all the way to the thigh and sort of opens out to a fan-like effect of material.
Concertina of fabric.
A concertina. So we're sort of sauntering through the corridors with material flapping left, right and centre. And Sam and I also ordered the same size, a large. And that in itself has caused a few comic effects this week. So Sam, thank you very much for the trousers. So I'm looking forward to my £10 back.
That was literally the worst teleshopping I've ever heard.
He's done well to sell them, but they are awful. No, my highlight of the week was whilst I was wearing these monstrosities. outside one of the lunchtimes this week, I was running some trials for an upcoming cross-country event for the year threes, actually. And they've never done cross-country to this extent before, so they're very excited. Had so many of them outside. We've been doing a daily mile, so it's been really something I've been looking forward to. The weather conditions are not great, and it was very, very slippery and wet with all the leaves down on the ground. And one poor boy at the start line gets wiped out by everybody else and used as a sort of stepping stone. Facing the leaves, really struggling. Children have all finished by the time he's sort of recovered. He's very upset. But actually, like for me, like the heartwarming thing about it was that afterwards he's like, Mr. Stewart, what should I do? And I said, well, you can go to medical if you're suffering, if you don't feel too good. He was like, no, I want to run the race. Everyone else has finished by this point, but he's adamant that he wants to do the laps, he wants to try. And bless him, he does the laps on his own, and everyone who was in the race is waiting at the finish line, clapping
him
in.
That's amazing, yeah.
And just like, for me, it's not a funny moment, it's like sort of a touching moment, and actually really like that solidarity with his friends. And they knew he was suffering, but, and for him, his determination to get to the finish was just great to see.
Fantastic, so, yeah. Attitude, hey?
My moment of the week, that.
Fantastic. Mine's slightly less heartwarming, I'm afraid. So I was on playground duty earlier this week. Obviously, it's been quite a blustery, windy affair, as we're all aware. And so everyone was expected to have their coats on. Now the kids bring their snacks out at the same time, so they have their snacks at break time. This one young lad that I taught last year, he appears on the playground and he's got this kind of black puffer coat on. He's got one arm in. And because of the gale force winds, the other arm is kind of spinning backwards and forwards, as he's furiously trying to sort of find it, as we've all kind of been in that situation before. Now, most of us just take the coat off and start again, but this lad, he had a giant apple clamped in
Granny
his
Smith.
Mouth. And yeah, basically for a good 2.5-3 minutes he could not get this coat on. And I mean, I know what you're thinking, I should have rushed over and helped, but he was looking
but it was just so funny.
He was looking straight at me, proper belly laughing, and we were both almost crying as he sort of like a demonic crow danced across the playground. It got to the point that kids were actually stopping and watching, and kind of gave him a round of applause when he finally managed to succeed in putting his coat on with about 3 minutes left of playtime.
I like it. That's a good moment, Ben. I like it.
So, moving on. This podcast, we're going to be looking at school trips, outdoor adventures, residentials, places that we've been, things that we've seen, the benefits, perhaps some of the problems with these trips. And we're also going to be sharing some of the tweets that we've had in from you guys. And you've responded brilliantly to this. I'm seriously quite stunned at some of the things that have happened up and down the country when we've taken our little ones out of the classroom. So, boys, so we kick off. I mean, we've come from different backgrounds, different experiences. What are your kind of lasting memories of school trips when you were children?
Yeah, I mean, my Ben and Sam give me a little bit of banter on Twitter and in person about my secondary school experience.
This was Hogwarts, right?
Hogwarts, yeah. Still got my broomstick. Two of my fondest trips from secondary school, I was very, very lucky to go to sort of fee-paying private secondary school where we had some unbelievable experiences. I managed to tour Barbados twice. I went on a rugby tour to South Africa and did a whole host of unbelievable experiences. So I've got those to draw upon. But looking back, I remember some primary school trips so fondly. I did Brooklands Museum a couple of times, the sort of motor racing track as a primary school child. Even younger than that, at my infant school, I did trips to the local farm. Lots of experiences recently as a teacher, and we'll touch on that a bit more. I've been to the Science Museum as well as some residential trips. And I think, as I say, we'll come into the specifics of the trips, but seeing children and adults in a totally different light to the way you see them day to day, breaking down some barriers that perhaps exist in the classroom, looking at different friendship groups evolving. It's an absolutely wonderful thing. I think it's going to make for an interesting discussion this morning.
I think we're all in agreement that the benefit of a school trip, whether that be a day out, whether that be a residential, really does make a difference to the children's lives. And I think the development you see in them, particularly for myself, I always taught in sort of year 5 and 6, and actually residential trips, you just see a transformation in the children. Starting off the week being quite excitable, possibly a bit immature, and in these new surroundings. And really, by the end of it, leaving as children who are really ready to step on to secondary school, they've fostered those friendships they can then take forwards. And I think just the life experiences that you can gain from taking children somewhere that maybe, due to circumstances at home, isn't a place they'd ever visit or get a chance to go to in the future, can make a huge difference.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, we were discussing off air about kind of with residentials, this idea that for most year groups, primarily year six, but for most year groups, when they do these trips, they do them at the end of the year, June, July kind of time. And I understand the logistics of kind of you've got any testing out of the way and generally the weather's better, etc. But so I was on a course, I remember it actually from last year because it was the same day as Liverpool Man United and I was very upset that I couldn't watch the football.
Do you remember the score?
I do actually. Oh. I think it was a draw.
Oh.
But you know, I was committed. I'm committed to my professional development.
Absolutely.
I went. Anyway, and someone was saying on this course that they run their residential at the start of the year, so they run their year 6 residential in September. Mm-hmm. And they were chatting to Ofsted about this, and they and they were kind of asked to explain why they did that.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we want them to, all these teamwork attributes and this positivity and this bonding, we want all that at the start of their year six journey. They kind of said that they had thought about why were they doing this at the end of the year when within a few weeks of doing this residential, the children were separating and going their separate ways, most of them anyway. Now, I appreciate that's not the same for every school, but they're certainly going to be going on to a much higher number of children on roll, etc. So they're going to be sort of moving away from their classmates. So perhaps it's something that certainly I think, well, I believe might actually change in the future, that we'll see more schools electing to do these trips at the beginning of the year so that the children also really get that quality time with their teacher, with their teaching assistants. The teacher really gets an insight into the children, picks up, they would probably pick up a lot more information doing it in September than perhaps they would just in class in September or October. So.
No, I can see many positives to what Ben's just said. While Ben was talking, I was umming and ahhing, mentioning, I'm not sure if I have mentioned it before, but I've been to Barbados twice on cricket tour when at secondary school. It did strike me then, just harping back to that, that you're going on these tours at the end of the season and you're doing all that wonderful stuff. You're building team relationships, you're getting to know each other in a different environment, and then you're never stepping on the field of play with them. With that group of people again, you're off to university, and a lot of the great stuff that's been generated on those trips has gone. And hopping back to what Ben has just said in the impact of perhaps moving a residential trip, a year six residential, to the autumn or to the start of the school year, for me, would have a huge amount of benefits. A lot of the time in schools, we're talking about developing values amongst our learners, developing relationships, coherence and cooperation. And I think throughout the school year, we're often trying to find ways and engineer opportunities for those things to happen. And so many times you hear teachers at the end of the school year that have come back glowing from their residential, talking about children, you know, really finding themselves, groups of friends emerging that didn't perhaps exist before. And I think we maybe, some of our schools are missing a trick in the sort of scheduling of these trips, and perhaps there would be widespread benefits of moving that to earlier in the year. I don't know.
I think you're completely right. I think we obviously, particularly in the upper end of the school, you're always working towards something, whether that be SATs, whether that be end of year assessments in year five.
Yeah.
Actually, if a child isn't particularly strong in those aspects of their schooling, you may have to wait until June or July to see a moment in the year where they really shine.
Yeah.
They could easily be the best rock climber, they could be the best orienteerer in your class, but you would never know until that point.
Is there an element that it's a reward, it's almost like a treat, it's something to look forward to? Because I know, like, I take my kids, we don't go on a residential, but we go to South Water Water Park for 3 days, and they do kayaking, canoeing, sailing, paddleboarding, etc.
Nice.
And there is an element,
something to work
like
towards,
like a positive kind of and that kind of this is a really nice thing for you to have that you know you associate with year five. And if you did it at the start of the year, is there a kind of
of that? I think and we'll probably touch upon it a little later in the conversation, is there's a lot of discussion at the moment in education about children lacking life experiences, children lacking vocabulary, not being able to apply things they know and have learned, you know, deep-rooted knowledge to their learning, whether that be writing, reading, or other subjects. I think we perhaps, again, I'll use the phrase missing a trick, but perhaps they generating these experiences earlier in the year, early in year six, you know, it could be something that you then use in the classroom. You use those experiences in writing. You reflect on situations that have happened on those residential trips. You find ways to give children those heightened and wider life experiences and then look for ways to apply that into the classroom. I feel that it's something I didn't know schools were doing until recently, but for me it's something that makes an awful lot of sense, and it's something I'd like to find out more about, certainly.
What about foreign trips? Do we think, like, going abroad? Do we feel like, I mean, I think it's still relatively rare, I think, but in primary schools, is it needed? I mean, there's plenty of opportunity in secondary schools for children to go abroad. Is it just another kind of, is there extra benefits? What do you think, Sam?
I think culturally, I think it could be a very immersive and exciting opportunity. I think you've just got to probably, I guess, tailor it to the age group. Tailor it to the learning in the classroom. If you've got a topic that you're working on, I know my school doesn't particularly focus on the World Wars, but if you have got a focus in your school in history and the World Wars, and you did take a trip to France, like, I could see the benefit. I could see that you're going to be really linking that to what we'll be doing back in the classroom. But in a sense, you do have those trips at secondary school. Do we now just want to really immerse our children in the local environment, taking them to trips nearby? And that sort of, I know parents often worry about these trips and children leaving for a day, a week, and there's some anxiety towards that. If you're having a child go to France or whatever, those anxieties are only going to be heightened and they're going to be concerned and they're that much further away.
And I guess, and there's also a school of thought recently that's saying that they've got time, let children be children. Yeah. They've got time to be teenagers. Like, there's like discussions sometimes with books that are being read. Like, let them, like, it will come in time. We don't have to push everything into the primary school sector. And out of good intentions, not anyone trying to sort of, say, oh, well, we just have to do it because we're primary schools. Like, we're the best of intentions. But I do think there's an element of that. Why do we need to do it when we know that they'll
I think it's perhaps a trend in schools. I wasn't working in schools, wasn't teaching in schools before the new curriculum in 2014, but the vibe I get and what I hear is that everything has been moved forward slightly. You know, children are learning things that they weren't learning earlier, and I think maybe that to actually access that learning, to be able to access the perhaps accelerated learning that they were not doing in years gone by, maybe heightened or earlier life experiences through trips might be something that some schools think could benefit them in those respects. In terms of traveling abroad for school trips, I think for me, logistically, it adds difficulty. I think schools need to go and visit these venues beforehand, which adds a cost implication and a logistical implication for teachers and staff. Mm-hmm. I think also, whilst it would be wonderful for children to experience flying, ferries, that does again add a layer of difficulty for teachers in terms of organising and managing behaviour, just logistically organising it. And the last thing is passports. I genuinely think there's a chunk of children in my class, a large chunk at the school, that wouldn't actually own a passport. Now, yes, with plenty of time that could be sorted, but again, there's cost implications for parents.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult. Not everyone has a computer. Yeah. I think it adds a layer of difficulty to something that doesn't need to be done.
I think with everything, with every discussion that we have, with every kind of consideration, it's about knowing your kids and knowing your catchment and knowing your community.
Yeah.
And the fact is that, like, there are certain parts of the country you're probably looking at 90% of children that don't have a passport. Mm. And that if you would say to them, we're running a £1,500 trip to Brussels for a week, that might be a real significant issue.
Whereas, I've been to Brussels.
I'm sure you have. Yeah. Whereas
flew there on his broomstick.
It was a foreign exchange. Whereas for other parts of our communities, that might not be that big an issue.
No, I firmly believe as well. I think, obviously, we're really keen to increase the opportunities for our children and open their eyes up to things. But actually, we've got so many places on our doorstep that our children haven't been to. Like, I have had children in the past when we've gone down to the coast for our residentials who've never seen the seaside before.
No.
They've never been in the sea. And I'm sure
that's pretty cold, let's be fair.
Very cold. Like, never been there.
I know that people are queuing up to go in the sea. Is it just like a bucket list thing for you?
The Dorset coast can be lovely at times.
But no, the Jurassic.
There's places like the seaside, museums, parks. Children don't always go to these places with their families, and we could do so much with residentials or trips in the UK that going abroad
and doing it.
Ben and I were both mentioning before recording this off air. We were mentioning that we'd both been on a trip to London in the last couple of years, a Houses of Parliament trip with some children in our school. And an eye opener for me, and I think Ben would probably replicate this, is how many children that went on that trip that hadn't actually been to London, and certainly not been to London recently. And as Sam touches on there, there's loads on our doorstep. I mean, you know, tourists would come to England and London would be one of the first places they go, certainly don't go regularly. And children have this sort of wealth of fantastic opportunity on their doorstep that they just don't experience. So why not embrace that rather than going further afield?
And the miraculous almost thing with London and the museums in this country, not just London, I mean, we're discussing London a lot because we're all southern lads, but is that these museums are free. We are so fortunate that you can walk into the Science Museum, the Natural History Museum. I was at the Leeds Armouries over half term. They're all free. I mean, fine, we pay for it through our tax, but therefore that costing isn't passed on to the kids.
No.
So you are in
makes
a situation,
it accessible, doesn't it?
Yeah, that you're only paying for the transport, which is obviously very expensive. But the other interesting thing with that trip in particular, which is something else that kind of I think really is a significant benefit of TRIPS, is children getting to see us as their teachers in a different light and have experiences that they've perhaps not had themselves. So, for example, on that trip, we ate lunch in the South Bank Centre, and then we wanted to walk up to Trafalgar Square and then round to the House of the Parliament. My year group partner and I could have found our way, but we just wanted to check that we were on the right route.
Yeah.
There were a group of police officers walking past, so I just went out and just double-checked with them that they thought we were going the right way, that there weren't any planned demonstrations or marches or anything that it might be wise to avoid.
And Ben covers every base.
Oh, you know. Yeah.
Loves. Did you ask them about weather as well, Ben?
Look, I'm just... what can I say? I'm thorough. So I just wanted to check that there was nothing kind of... Because, I mean, all right, I wasn't going to say it, but this was about 3 days after there had been the poisoning in Salisbury. Okay. So things were slightly heightened.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the kids were all sat there and could see me out the window having a perfectly normal conversation with a group of police officers. Now, for lots of those children, perhaps they hadn't actually seen an adult just engaging in a normal conversation with the police.
Yeah.
They 90% of their impression is crime when they think of the police. Yeah. So it gave another opportunity to reinforce to some of these children that actually these are people that we go to for help, that adults go to for help. And I think that is something that... it's great for them to see when we go on these trips and we're no longer the expert. We defer to other people that know more about something. That's as much as we all as educators are trying to aspire to do that in front of our children and show them that we're all lifelong learners. Actually seeing you say to someone and ask questions yourself about, oh, well, when was this built or why is this like that?
Yeah.
That's amazing for kids to see. And we shouldn't negate the benefits that really has for some of our children.
Certainly. And I think what Ben's really talking about is giving children... real world experience. We often talk about giving children real world experience. We talk about applying learning to real world contexts, but some of these children aren't getting that real world experience, and they're certainly not seeing it through through perhaps the eyes that they could be seeing it through. You know, they've grown up in a certain situation, which means, as Ben has alluded to there with the police, they may see police in a different way. And we're talking about trying to give children opportunities to see the world with open eyes in a certain way. And that might be, and it might be that there's opportunities for more school trips locally, you know, taking children to the local supermarket, walking through the local town, just giving children experience of the world, their community, that they may not otherwise see outside of the school day.
Yeah, you're right. And I think as teachers and as schools, we have an incredible opportunity and power to enhance the lives of these children in our classes. Yeah. Like, of course, our aim at the end of the day is to produce children that are academically capable, but at the same time, we need to foster children who are genuinely nice people and can converse with...
And not just citizens of this country.
And can converse with not just us, but members of the public. I know on school trips we've had to stop at service stations many times, so it's been long journeys, and just seeing children in that environment where they're not in a situation they're familiar with, and they have to ask, oh, I'm sorry, where are the toilets? Or is there anywhere to fill up my water bottle? And actually, you as teachers model that to the children. It's really powerful because that might not necessarily happen very often for them in their home lives.
Nice.
So what about... So thinking about our own kind of experiences of taking children away... have we got any kind of any highlights, any lowlights, any fears or triumphs, anything that we want to share?
I think David and I, we've actually been on a couple of the same trips, and I think
I bet that went well.
We're still there, it's fine.
But I think
I think we can have some memories that are probably quite similar. But for me, so residential trip, getting involved with the children, showing off that actually it's okay if you're a bit concerned or worried about something, but promoting the fact that if you overcome a challenge, how wonderful you'll feel. And for me, the one thing that I'm not great with is confined spaces and potholes.
Is there a reason for that, Sam?
Where does that stem from? Let's get some Freud out here.
I'm quite a large guy.
Just to clarify, he's shorter than I am. Okay. So I don't quite know what that means.
Compared to David, I feel like a fully grown man. I just don't like confined spaces. But anyway, potholing, and I had all the kids were brilliant at all the other things across the week, but there was a couple of moments where they were nervous. So in this case, I was a bit nervous, and the children tried to tell me that it was going to be okay. So in the end, I was convinced. And I got into this tunnel. Did not realise the tunnel was not made for adults whatsoever. Ended up getting stuck, and I've got three or four children behind me pushing my feet, trying to get me through. I've got two members of the PGL staff pulling me the other end, and I'm genuinely stuck.
There's fairy liquid involved, honey, soap. I'm like, we're trying to find anything.
And it's an absolute nightmare. They're all laughing and wetting themselves. The instructors are saying, why on earth did you get in? This is not made for you.
How many days were you down there, son?
Well,
I've had visions of those poor footballer lads.
I missed the campfire that night. I was sitting there.
There was no kumbaya. There was no baritone on the same
They brought the fire to me.
Did you get out?
I got out in the end. Much too inappropriate.
They didn't have to break the rock. Like, no, they didn't send in the drills.
But no, it was quite scary. But probably, I can guess what Dave was about to say, but I'll let him fill in.
Yeah, this was on the same trip, actually. And now I consider myself a fairly brave guy.
Blimey, paid off some bravery over here. I do apologise.
Fairly brave.
I went on this same trip. The same trip Sam's alluding to, and I unsurprisingly found the potholing manageable.
Like a hobbit.
I crawled through with these.
Rabbit run.
The issue I have is heights. I'm not great with heights. I used to be fine with heights, but as I've got a little bit older, maybe a little bit wiser, I've found
not much taller.
Not much taller. I've found heights to be a real problem. Now, the week was going swimmingly. We'd done orienteering, which was wonderful. We'd done potholing, which suited me down to the ground. But it came to day three, and my group of eight children were tasked with the activity of the giant swing. Now, I will emphasise the word giant. This swing was absolutely enormous.
6 foot high? 7 foot?
12. It was also on the edge of a cliff on the Jurassic coast of Dorset.
You can see the edge.
Now, I was happy because I had a group of eight and the children were to go in pairs, which was fantastic. So, because I could watch on, I was like, guys, I would love to do it. I'd absolutely love to do the giant swing. Done it before, but because you're in pairs, it's fine. But there was one lad who was a very very experienced climber. He does rock climbing out of school. Heights did not faze him. And he went with his pair. And they didn't get to the height he'd like. It was one of these things where you go back a certain distance, and the distance you go back impacts on how far you'll swing forward, how high you'll go and how far you'll swing forward. Now this lad, the very sort of experienced climber, the chap that wasn't afraid of heights, he was upset. He was gutted that he hadn't got to experience the giant swing in all its glory. So he asked me, Mr. Keat, will you come on the giant swing? And I said, you know, I'd love to. I've done it before.
I've done it too many times. I'm bored of it.
I'll tell you what, I'm saving my energy for the night walk. But anyway, he wasn't getting any cheerier. So he wasn't getting any... Sorry, Ben's making me laugh. He wasn't getting any cheerier. So I ended up getting on it. And we were going back and back and back. And I was thinking, we'll stop here. We're far enough back. We'll stop here. No, we got to the top, and I was looking at the instructor, I was looking in his eyes, I was thinking, you know, you give me that signal and we'll go. I'm ready for it, I'm going to give it everything. And little did I know, was the lad next to me had the rope that you pull to let go, and I was like, my stomach, everything went.
I'm still there.
It's still there, but you know, like, I've never experienced anything quite like it, and safe to say I haven't been on the giant swing since. There we go.
Well, thanks for that Dickensian, that Shakespearean sort of run-through of what is clearly still quite a traumatic experience in Mr. Keith's life. Yeah, he's taken away. There's no ladders in the house.
No, live in a bungalow.
So as we're sharing some stories, I thought it would be nice to just read out a couple of tweets that we've had in. So we've had one from Phil Martinez. Thank you for tweeting us. And he said that his first school trip as an NQT... as a goodwill gesture from a new designer outlet, he's chosen not to name which one. Good for legal reasons. This was 20 years ago, apparently. They invited classes from local schools. Obviously, needed a bit of good PR because there were environmental protesters involved. anyway, so the classes sat down at the opening ceremony, and a protester apparently burst in and stripped to the waist in front of his class of traumatised year fours, which I guess also touches on another kind of aspect of what we're discussing, and that is kind of the responsibility that we have running these trips. I mean, in a situation like that, it is that kind of heart-sinking moment of, oh, like, what do you tell, like, I mean, I'm presuming as he hasn't said that it was a bloke, so to a degree there isn't a huge issue, But it's still that kind of, you don't want that, like, you're responsible for these children, you don't want that kind of message going home. Like, there are pressures on teachers, and I still know colleagues now that do get nervous about trips. And like, when we did that London trip, I'm crossing these roads, walking these kids through central London. We had 60 kids, I think we had about 10 adults. Excuse me. And it is one of those that you get that occasional, like, do we not? I mean, I certainly get on the coach at the end of the day and kind of breathe that kind of slight sigh of relief when you're 90% certain that you've got everyone.
Yeah.
And you do that head count of, I do it one way, my year group partner does it the other way, and we get to the end and we say to each other, have we got the same number? And
we'll go again.
I still worry sometimes, what do we do if we get halfway down the M25 and I've realise that there's a child sat outside Buckingham Palace?
I think that's it, isn't it? As a teacher, you your comfort zone does become the classroom. Yeah. You get very used to the classroom and you're comfortable there. And however many times you do these trips, and some of you will have done trips many more times than me, it is still outside of the norm. You're dealing with children who are experiencing something new. Yeah. Mm. You're dealing with factors that
beyond
you don't...
control,
they
are
beyond your control, and they change every time you do a certain trip. So... I think I can certainly relate to your anxieties there.
Yeah. What about you, Sam? Have you ever lost anyone?
I can tell two quick stories. So
not Dickensian like David. No, we have got a time limit on the podcast.
No, I don't know now. No, we had a trip last year, just a local trip actually, just down to sort of 10, 15 minutes down the road, taking the year sixes to a sort of, I guess, like a sort of health and safety aspect in terms of when you're by the railways, when you go down to the coast, when you're in your house, how to keep safe. And all sort of presented by the emergency services. And we obviously have a sort of ratio of children to adults. And we get sort of 15 minutes into our journey and nearly at this location. And I get a phone call from one of the members of staff that's coming on the trip. And she rings me and she's on another coach, or what I think is on another coach. And she goes, "Sam, where are you?" And I said, "I'm on the coach, what do you mean?" She goes, "I'm at school still, you've left me behind."
Oh my God.
That's
amazing.
And that sinking feeling when I realised that not only had I left someone behind, but I'd openly said to both coach drivers, "We're ready to go, let's
move." What did
you
do?
Well, she was quite upset.
So basically you forgot her.
I forgot her. And she was my NQT mentor. I do know her well. And all I could do was just continue the trip.
Luckily, did she not come?
Luckily, we did have enough adults as it was. She didn't make it. When I got back, I had to be very, very apologetic. She didn't speak to me for a day or two.
So sorry, can we clarify? As an NQT, you left your NQT mentor behind and went on a trip without her.
That is...
Sam had to redo his NQT.
That is exactly this incident. No, and the second incident, in terms of responsibility, and this is a bit more serious. No, on the school trip, obviously... You are completely right. You're in an environment you are not overly familiar with, and you are sort of entrusting the children's safety, not just in your hands, but in the hands of the members of staff at the residential location you're at. And one night the children were doing capture the flag, and obviously that will entail children running around the site, potentially hiding in places. And we got to the end of the night, about 9 o'clock, children were heading back to cabins, and all of a sudden a girl comes up to me and says, Mr. Stewart, the girls, I can't find them. And panic does set in. When you hear the words, "we can't find someone," you do start to worry. And we were running around this site, severely concerned for their well-being. Transpires, they're just simply sat outside a cabin that is actually for another school, not us. They just got a bit lost. And it was absolutely fine. But that dread that it does fill you with.
Huge responsibility, isn't it?
You have to then tell parents, like, that fear, just for 5 minutes, was horrible. And you do realise how much sort of parents trust us with their children. Their children mean everything to them.
Yeah,
it's a big moment when they let them go on a week-long residential.
Yeah, and it is.
It can be
scary. Yeah, and I think we forget, and I think you're right, that we get into this bubble of kind of comfort in our schools and we kind of go through the motions each day. And when it does change, when you do sort of step outside that door, it is a different world, and it does carry with it its own issues. I mean, when I was teaching in the Middle East, we were visiting a local park, which the area that I was in the UAE, we weren't as fortunate as we are here. There were limited places for us to take kids on school trips, so we were taking them to this park. A colleague and I, on the buses, pull up outside this park, get out to go in, and the security guard starts talking in Arabic to one of our teaching assistants, and it turned out that it was a female-only day. It was a women's-only day at this park.
Wow.
So obviously they were able to sort of enjoy visiting the park without wearing their full face veils, etc. And it's myself and another male colleague on this bus. So we're sat on these coaches with sort of 60 kids speaking a myriad of different languages in sort of 45 degree heat and looking at each other like, what on earth are we going to do? Like, our parents at this school would not have accepted that we were just cancelling the trip. So we had to phone the school. They got into, I mean, this school was a private school, but it was owned by the Sheikh of the Emirate. His staff or whatever had to get involved. Phone calls were made. And we were allowed into this park, but under the considerable instructions that we didn't go anywhere near anyone else in the park. So my friend and I, my colleague and I, were so paranoid about offending anyone that we spent the rest of the trip walking around, basically just staring at each other. So that even if there was sort of a group of women in the distance, we couldn't accidentally... We wanted to respect religious sensitivities and everything, we're such problem solvers in the classroom anyway. Yeah. When you're on a school trip, I mean, a child suddenly becomes ill or an adult that you're with becomes ill and you've not got enough adult to child ratios. There's so many things or issues that potentially can go wrong. And very quickly, I had a colleague of mine has given me the all clear to share this story. She was on a school trip with EYFS class. They're on a bus going down the motorway. There was a slight issue with one of the children behind her. So she obviously got out of her seat, was walking down the bus to see what the problem was. And the coach driver had to perform an emergency stop or braked hard. And she flew down the coach and cracked her head on the front of the coach. Split her head open. I think she knocked herself out. And this is obviously in front of all of the children. She had to go off to hospital. They had to send... I think, from what I recall, she actually broke the windscreen or damaged the coach. So they had to change coaches for the children to carry on with their trip. And I mean, it's funny how these things come about. But I mean, she's fine now, but she basically refuses to get out of the seat now. The children could be on fire and she would tell them to pull themselves together. So, but what about parents? I mean, parents that come on trips, that's another area that we've not kind of discussed. I mean, we couldn't run these trips without the support of parents. What do we think?
I think we had a little chat before the podcast about the goodwill of everyone who gives their free time and often time beyond their working hours to come on these trips. Parent volunteers on trips are absolutely priceless. I know we've all mentioned trips we've been on where parents have given their free time very, very willingly and so kindly, often at the expense of having to work themselves. I've known parents who have taken time off work to come on school
holiday
trips
days,
to
help
us. Holiday days. And, you know, with the situation as it is in the education system and cuts and budgets being very, very, very tight, we are often reliant on the goodwill of others, and that happens throughout the school calendar, but particularly on trips when you're asking people to give up their evenings, give up their holiday, their work holiday. That's fantastic and absolutely priceless to schools.
I think as well, it really probably goes without saying often in schools, but there are people behind the scenes that put so much effort into trips, and the organisation of it would not happen without their support. So office staff at my school are wonderful. I think as teachers, we're sort of the face of the trip, and we're the ones that the parents assume are behind the organisation. But actually, the things they do in terms of organising where we're going, how we're getting there, stops on the way, all the payments and the medical side of it. And for me, what was a lovely thing that happened for us was that we were struggling actually to get numbers this year to take the residential trip. And actually, two of the office staff sort of put their hands up and said, you know what, we do all the sort of behind the scenes stuff, we never get to see the impact on the children. We hear about it after, but it's just not quite the same. And they got to come along on this trip. They had their own group of children, and they don't normally work with these children in any regard other than sort of when something's wrong with the child. So if they've forgotten a bit of kit or they don't feel well, and actually the relationships they built and the impact that they saw for the first time of really their hard work in the office was so brilliant to see. And I think we also spoke off air about just seeing adults in a different light and seeing people that you take obviously very professionally, but you learn more about them, their personal lives, you see them for who they really are. And I think that's also a massive benefit of these trips.
Yeah, completely. And I think the other really nice thing to remember is we see adults, we see our staff, our colleagues in different lights, but it's also, I really like seeing the parents that come along and how they react, how they interact with their children and the other children in the class. Like, I think you can pick up a lot, you can learn a lot about the children in your class by seeing how their parents behave how they converse when they're on trips. I mean, I remember as a kid being so excited if my dad was able to come on a trip. I mean, he works in central London, still does. And the occasions that he did take a day off. I mean, I remember going to the Golden Hind And like, I'll never forget that because it was like I felt so special that I had my dad on a trip.
I've had similar experiences as a child.
It is amazing. I mean, I just think I can recall I went on a trip last year and
maybe that's it.
Schools are struggling to get adults with. Bring your dad to work day. I'll mention it to him. Sure, he'd love it. He'd absolutely love it. Anyway, I was on a trip last year and we were going to the Ardingly Showground, so it's a bit of a bumpy, twisty, turny road. And I mean, we've all done it.
Sounds posh, man.
We were going to a science fair. It's a very good trip, the Big Bang Science Fair. Nice. Little advert there. We've all had it. I mean, we've avoided talking about it, but we've all been on trips where suddenly the sick bags are coming out.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, on this particular trip, it actually got to the point that we were running out of sick bags. My colleague and I described it as something like the Somme. Like, children were dropping left, right, and centre. And there was one particular point where this mum, absolutely fantastic mum, she had already helped us kind of clean up two kids that had been unwell. And a third child was unwell in sort of the aisle, the walkway on the coach. And she was on her hands and knees. My colleague and I told her to stop and that we would do it. Like, genuinely, we said, you don't need to be doing this. But she completes it. It's absolutely fine. She's on her hands and knees cleaning this up. And the best bit was she turned around to this lad who had just been very unwell, who was very upset, and she said, "Oh, look, it's absolutely fine. It's just an adventure."
And I thought, what an adventure!
Yeah, and I mean, we sent her a bunch of flowers. I mean, I thank her now every time I see her on the playground. But it is just those moments that you just think, do you know what? Like, people care, and children, see that. Those children would have seen that the impact that it sounds like it is a gross story, obviously, but the impact that that moment would have had on some of those children's lives, and seeing someone that
it's children seeing things, people going above and beyond, doing things they don't have to do to help others, and that's such a valuable message for children.
And we want our children to end up being people that will do that themselves.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just reading a few more of the tweets that you've sent in. I mean, we've got a couple. I mean, somebody tweeted us in. I'm sorry, I don't have the tweet in front of me, saying that one of their class stole something from the Museum of Scotland, the National Scotland Museum. Something from the gift shop. I mean, that's obviously an interesting experience. I'm not sure whether you found out whilst you were in the shop or when you were pulled over by the police on the journey home. We've also got another person here who was taking, so this is Mrs. R. She sent us a couple of tweets this morning. Basically, the first one outlining that they tried to do a runner from their hotel in France because they didn't want to pay a fine. When I kind of probed this a little bit, she told us that, just to be clear, there was no damage to the room, but the hotel manager was very scary. None of the adults dared confront her. One brave year six girl argued with her about a very old mark on the carpet. The coach driver even got to the point that he had to have the engine running as we chucked all of the cases in the boot and drove away.
Oh, my God. I've got actually just remembered something a little bit similar, which Ben and Sam are going to absolutely rinse me for again. So I was on a rugby tour in Ireland. I was about 13 at the time.
So quite loads is there anywhere you've not been?
So this was a hotel in Waterford. Now, similar situation to the one Ben just alluded to via the tweet. I actually I'd made myself a nice cup of tea after a hard day of rugby, and I thought, you know what, the bin was the other side of the room. I'll throw the tea bag in the bin. I completely missed the bin. This tea bag exploded over the hotel wall, and it was very similar situation. We were due to check out pretty swiftly after that morning, and it was a case of like, could we get out? Could we do that before being caught? But that was my little bit there.
Homework. Made for teachers, by teachers.
So I think that is about all we've got time for today. I mean, we've had concussed staff members, we've had children nicking from shops, and we've also had getaway drivers and naked protesters. So if you think you can, and I mean, that's just David's weekend. So I mean, if you think that, if you think you can top trump, to quote the esteemed leader, anything that we've shared today, please do contact us on the podcast, and please, as we said, it would be great for you to subscribe, share the pod as wide as you can, and talk to colleagues about this as well, because we hope that what we're doing is entertaining and useful and prompting a bit of debate as well.
Just wanted to say on behalf of myself, Sam and Ben, a massive, massive thank you for everyone's feedback, everyone that's listened, everyone's comments. We're certainly taking comments on board. We're hoping to grow this and grow this, and hopefully we can keep learning along the way. But thank you so much for listening.
No, absolutely. And we'll let you know when the next pod is going to be available. So keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter handles and keep listening. Thanks, guys.
For much more content exclusively for teachers by teachers, visit homeworkmagazine.co.uk. Also, please follow us on social media at homework_magazine and at homework_podcast. Homework Podcast is brought to you by Iguanas Producciones.